Hi, folks. This is Christian with another edition of the Ice Age Farmer podcast. As always, mapping a path forward to prosperity, building resilient, self-sufficient communities, and sharing knowledge in the grand solar minimum. Today, we'll be discussing our daily steps towards self-sufficiency, what folks in the community are doing to prepare themselves and their families for the uncertain times ahead. Then we'll be dipping into a bit of an icebreaker. I'll be sharing with you some selections from Dennis Avery's article, Here's How to Avoid Climate Panics, which was a hat tip to Robert Felix, who mentioned that one today. Then we're going to do a new segment called Damage Reports, people who are checking in with reports of crop losses on their own properties, or basically symptoms of the changing climate and how they are manifesting with respect to their own efforts to achieve self-sufficiency. So sort of like the steps, but how those steps should have been working and aren't due to the extreme circumstances, and learning from that new information and refining our efforts constantly. Then we'll be getting into some of the latest news, some data that we can use to increase our preparedness and make sure our systems are sufficiently resilient to tolerate the changing conditions. And finally, I'll take a couple questions today. One with respect to potting soil that I'll speak briefly to. And then actually I'm going to take a question on self-defense, which is something that we haven't talked about here, but to the extent that food security is both growing food and then ensuring security, it's something that I decided I've been avoiding for too long and needs to be discussed, even though there are some reasons, and I'll mention these, that I have avoided that. I think it's worth talking about it. Let's get into that. But before we do all that, I'd like to first remind you that Ice Age Farmer is available on iTunes via iceagefarmer.com/iTunes, and as well on Stitcher, which is iceagefarmer.com/Stitcher. I put those out there so that you can use whatever podcast or video medium you prefer, and likewise so that you can give whatever links are appropriate to your friends and family members that consume that kind of media. So feel free to pass on the word, because we definitely need to ensure that they are as well getting prepared for what's going on. All right, with that, let's get on to the daily step section. So in this segment, we like to highlight steps that folks from the Ice Age Farmer community are taking as they share their experiences, their lessons that they're learning about things that work and things that don't, and in general, progress towards increased food security and self-sufficiency. Today, Gretchen shares that she has been clearing another garden space on our land with a large place for squash, pumpkin, and melon type stuff in the summer, which in the wintertime will be used like our existing garden for cold weather crops. And she's also looking into moringa, which is great. Roger mentions, actually, he wants to jump onto the goat versus cow dialogue and add to it a bit. He asserts goats are going to fare poorly in a solar minimum due to the increased precipitation, that I guess they don't do well in waterlogged areas. Maybe someone else can speak to that. He does assert that bison would do well, which is interesting. A friend of mine has yaks, which are friendly and huge, such large animals. I don't know much about bison. New Eyes 777 and her husband moved recently from a big city out into the boonies. So congratulations to them and having the bravery to go through that. Her daughter is not too far away from them now, on 20 acres with a water supply, a river nearby, a pond, some forest land. They're raising a couple groups of chickens. Dew on the ground in the morning, rain, fog. Yeah. Also have hundreds of blackberry bushes. Sounds like a fun setup you have there, New Eyes. The livestock outnumber the people. That's my kind of party. All right, Valerie. I have grown vegetables, she describes, at 9,000 feet in a very cold zone in Colorado high country for 15 years. So she's already an Ice Age farmer. Let's see what she has to say. Frost blankets are a must all summer to protect from hailstorms, wind, unexpected frosts, bugs, etc. They make them in three different weights, all of which I use at different times. I also have hail cloth, which I'll have to check into. We've seen so much hail everywhere lately. Four times of the year when I'm not using yet those blankets. But mostly I use those blankets, anyone in a cooler zone or anyone with any risk of frosts really needs to get some of these blankets. They're cheaper than a greenhouse, and they serve multiple purposes as well. And as we'll see in the news today, Russia, even though it's early August in the southern of the northern hemisphere, Russia is already experiencing some frosts and elsewhere as well. So it might be worth looking into these frost blankets. Let's check that out. All right, bananas. Finally, I've been growing my own shiitake and oyster mushrooms for years. Sadly, my logs have finally petered out, although they did last 6 years and were only supposed to last three. Now I'm starting to practice with short season seeds, cold tolerant seeds, and mildew resistant seeds that are non-GMO. Gardening, he volunteers, is harder than people think. And plus, most people don't know how to get seeds from root vegetable plants, especially. Which, at the very end of the show, I'm going to mention a resource that will help us get over our lack of knowledge of how to save seeds. We'll get to that. And then finally, myself. I had a couple folks recommend Mylar as a cheap reflective material for lining grow boxes. It's definitely not as sturdy as the other insulation that I've mentioned before, Reflectix. But it does do the trick, and is a lot cheaper, actually. I'll put a link in the show notes to a source for some Mylar. I have been pondering crickets and cricket powder, cricket protein. It's not, you know, farming crickets gets a great reaction from a lot of people. But when you look at it, it's not very capital intensive. Very little square foot, you know, very little area is required. You can do it in a small space. And it's a quite fast growing protein. Chickens love them. Actually, there's tons of different uses for these crickets. So I'll drop some links in the show notes to a couple cricket farming resources that I'm just sort of pondering right now. I'm also investigating electroculture, thanks to a hat tip to Sean C for returning my attention to that idea, that low-level voltage can increase the yield on plants. Again, I'll put a couple links to some of those subjects below. You know, this has also been an exceptional week on my home front here. I've been pulling some solo dad duty and having a couple days where, you know, just getting through, just feeding him and getting him where he needed to be and getting me to work and doing everything that needed to get done was, I mean, felt like more than a 100% effort. And so I just wanted to put that out there because I know that, damn, there's a lot of people that on a lot of days, there's just already, we're already at capacity. We're already beyond capacity. And I appreciate that. But I think that in light of what's going on, this is now the time to quickly start finding some creative solutions, doing whatever's required to free up some of your own resources. Whatever it is we find ourselves juggling probably isn't going to be around in just a few years. And neither are we if we stay in these existing patterns, these abusive relationships with our employers or our clients, whatever it is you're locked into. A lot of us have things that we perceive, that we have perceived as necessary for some time now, for a reality that we had constructed and imagined and were working towards. And as we now integrate this new information that we're getting every day and learning, we need to be actively positioning ourselves instead for a different future, a new reality, and strip away those old, now unnecessary patterns. I just wanted to share that. So I know the daily steps section must feel like you're being mocked when you are already just working your ass off. But I wanted to explicitly call out here that I know you're out there. I appreciate you. I have those days too. And let's be equally motivated to move away from those patterns. They're not fun or rewarding anyway, right? All right, what about you? What steps have you been taking to move yourself and your family closer to food security, food sovereignty? A better place for the times ahead, given that we are seeing climates spin out of control, massive hailstorms destroying crops, food price rises, traditional agriculture collapse, and geopolitical tensions designed to mask all this and keep it out of the news, a tremendous social engineering agenda shall I go on? There are a number of reasons that it makes sense to take our own food production, our own food security into our own hands yesterday and make sure that we're good at doing it before tomorrow gets here. What are you doing? Tell me about that. Let me know what's working. Let me know what's not. And let's share that out and help map that path forward for us all. All right. With that, let's get into the icebreaker section. Today, I wanted to share some selections from Dennis Avery's piece, quote, ironically titled, quote, "Here's How to Avoid Climate Panics." In this, he basically introduces the idea of solar cycles and the fact that we don't need to be completely alarmist about the climate. What he fails to do is realize that we are entering, he's actually describing some pretty problems. I'll go ahead and just read the, quote, "Little ice ages," quote, that he's been describing in his article up to this point, "kill off more humans than any other natural disaster. Cultures around the world have failed again and again, as the chaotic cold prevented farmers from harvesting enough grain to feed their cities. During past Little Ice Ages, humans also suffered rampant epidemics of diseases such as cholera, and then indeed the bubonic plague. The 200-year solar sunspot minimums are one of the patterns, one of the cycles that he describes in this piece. Quote, "Our sun currently has fewer sunspots than at any time in the last 100 years. The Maunder sunspot minimum, 1645 to 1710, caused terrible famines during the Little Ice Age. But historians tended to ignore sunspot minimums during global warmings. They didn't cause major famines. A recent re-examination of the sunspot record found that solar minimums drop Earth's thermometer readings sharply for about 60 years, and that happens every 200 years. And we're due. We're seeing it happen now." Finally, from his closing, I just wanted, "Knowing what major climate cycles are coming and roughly when should enable us to better prepare for the inevitable. That should cut costs and boost survivability. In sharp contrast, the costs of our current public climate panic have been enormous. We've spent billions of dollars on computer models that don't work and on misguided CO2, quote, research that found no answers." And this is what I wanted to highlight. It's painful to hear. Once you see where we are and what our society needs to be focusing its resources on, feeding the masses in new ways, creating massive vertical farms that can sustain our population, and instead, no, trillions of dollars are being spent on subsidies for wind turbines, solar panels made with rare earths, biofuel crops, and the Paris Accord alone requirements is $1 trillion per year. When you imagine if our political cryptocracy, the ruling elite, I refuse to call them elite, were actually, if they actually cared, if they actually directed these resources. But of course, it's not a surprise, and I can't rationally be suddenly upset about this now, because we have always, on this planet, had the resources to feed everyone. It has always been the case, instead, that there are these people in control who don't want to, whose interest is not met by doing that. So now, seeing that we're squandering our time and our resources on, is no surprise. And we should focus now instead on the future we're building, instead of what these people have been doing, these things. So all in all, kind of a weird article. I just thought it was odd that in an attempt to claim that the current craze is alarmist and that there's nothing to be worried about, he includes factual evidence that we're entering a 200-year sunspot minimum, which historically has killed off more humans than any other natural disaster. I'm not sure he put two and two together there, folks, but nonetheless, some good information in there, and I wanted to share it. All right, let's move on to the new segment, Ground Reports. I, myself, have definitely seen leaves changing, and since tweeting about it, I've heard back from multiple other sources, reports across the globe confirming this. It's not just Japanese maples we're talking about here. It's normal deciduous trees that are turning early. In fact, I want to share this own report from a farming and homesteading family in the Ozarks. To be, you know, full disclosure, this was actually a comment to Adapt 2030, but I think this is extremely valuable data and very relevant, and we're all in this together, so I hope no one minds. This particular family in the Ozarks mentioned that they're unable to grow any brassicas without early bolting. That's broccoli and that whole family. Potatoes have been failing miserably for them, which I've actually heard from lots of other sources in other places as well. It's pretty concerning, given that they were high up on my list as on everyone's list as one of the most calorie dense crops. Insects, they're seeing extreme numbers of beetles and other pests this year and last year, as well as increased vermin between mice, voles, possums, raccoons, skunks, armadillos, and coyotes. Yeah, that's a good enough reason to pick up a 22, which we'll talk about later. All right, some fungi has been plaguing them. Rust, all of C-A-R, C-J-R, C-H-R, has been wreaking havoc to their apple trees. The pear trees have been plagued by fire blight, and they've had to cut those down before the dieback gets to the rootstock to keep it from taking the entire tree. Also having trouble with the beehives failing, the pheromones dropping, and then queens not doing well. Finally, this individual mentions that it was really warm and moist this last winter and throughout January and February 2017. All the fruit trees came out of dormancy the second week of January this year, and by the end of February, they already had blossoms set. But then when we had a few days of hard frosts in March of 2017, it killed the buds. Our apples took it all right, but we have no fruit this year from any of our Arkansas black trees or Heritage and Heirloom Cider apple. They're just completely barren. So it's hard to hear, and, you know, condolences there. But and I want to share this because I think these are the sorts of things that are causing similar crop losses in major, you know, at scale. This is not a unique situation at all. And that's what we're talking about here. All right, more local reports. Someone in Tucson let me know that they are barely breaking 100 degrees out there for the summer compared to the 90s when it was 100 degrees plus most of April through June, and even over 110 degrees. I mean, that's Tucson, Arizona. I visited there in the early 90s and it was blistering hot, but that was the point. It was Tucson, Arizona. Also, lots of information coming in from Canadians who are, maybe they're just the canaries in the situation here, but they are getting ridiculously low temperatures, way under what's expected for August, and they are sounding the bell. What about you? What's going on near you? What are you seeing that has been working in the past that's no longer working, or what have you been trying that's not getting you where you need to be? Pose any of those progress reports or questions to iceagefarmer@gmail.com. And let's keep an eye collectively, our eyes to the ground, since we cannot depend on the news media to cover what's going on. Although I try to do my best piecing together the news, we'll get to it in a second here, the news at iceagefarmer.com/Twitter. The importance of us all keeping an eye on what's going on around us and sharing that information with each other so that we can continue to construct a big picture, given the data we're not getting from the media. This is how we're going to do it, folks. This is open source intelligence, and let me know what you're seeing. All right, with that, let's get on to the news. Like I just said, it's mostly local news. I wanted to first mention that Bitcoin is up hugely. If you had held your Bitcoin through the fork, the non-fork, as I'd recommended, congratulations, doing quite well. We are definitely seeing volcanic activity right now continuing. Two new eruptions, one in the U.S. and one in Russia. Also, that notably, the two large earthquakes that struck China just the other day. I am glad to report that Al Gore's movie completely flopped. To me, and I don't just share this to be snooty, I am really taking this, I'm reading into this. I see here that people are, they're just tired of it. They're tired of the lies. They're tired of this narrative. And more than that, they're ready for the truth. I think people are now especially seeing what's going on. And as many people constantly tell me, most people aren't going to truly be receptive until these food prices skyrocket and people are forced to recognize that everything has changed, that they don't have any money once they buy their groceries anymore. And maybe we'll truly have to wait for that, for the big shift, although who knows what will happen as that does to keep people distracted. But again, I'm going off track here. Watching Al Gore come out and try and reinforce his narrative and seeing no one care tells me that the establishment has lost. It's lost that narrative. People are tired of it. They're ready for the truth. And it's up to us to be spreading this information and ensuring that the breadcrumbs, as I've said in the past, are there and available and easy to follow for people so that as they turn on, as they reestablish their own critical thinking and look for this information, that it's readily available and that they can quickly find the path we need them to be on, which is the truth. Moving on, we're seeing signs of the early winter. Russia already experiencing freezing temperatures and frosts, even though it's early. I mean, this is August 9th. Guys, it's the middle of summer still. The Daily Mail, get ready for the fall in temperatures. And recognizing that most across the U.S. is having record lows right now. The winter continues to be beyond intense. In the southern hemisphere, we saw thunder snow, which sounds cooler than it is to experience, I'm quite certain, in the Blizzard of Oz down in Australia. The latest news on climate scientists having gone full felon, just completely outright lying and changing data. These reports, as you know, if you watch my channel, come out once a week. We see the Australian Bureau of Meteorology and these different official climate science, quote unquote, depots being outed as completely fabricating their entire reports. Lightning, another thing to watch out, like night lightning and hail are the two highly local but highly dangerous things that we've had our eye on lately. Bulgaria, several people killed, and then separate lightning strikes in Munger killed 5 people. I saw that Indian government was actually forming a committee to investigate the drastically increased number of fatalities associated with lightning events. And I cite that to illustrate that we're not just like finding random people that happen to get struck by lightning and naming them and saying, see, the crazy things are happening. This is a drastic increase in the atmospheric electrical activity, in the lightning and fatalities from lightning, in positive lightning. And these are all signs of the changes that are going on in our solar system and on our planet. With that, let's get on to your questions. Folks who have sent questions to iceagefarmer@gmail.com. Today, I wanted to answer this one. What potting soil do I use? I have two answers to this question. The short answer is that I actually do have an affinity for Fox Farms Ocean Forest, just because I've tried a few different blends, and I find that I get pretty remarkable results from that one. And I think some other growers have concurred with that. Let me know what you use if you've got plenty of experience with this, because I'd love to know. The long answer is a little more involved. Obviously, that's why it's long. And that's that the potting soil is an input, right? It's an input to the system. We're trying to grow food so we can eat it, because food is an input to us. Among the things that are inputs to the food are the potting soil. And so I don't want to buy it. I want to be able to make it, because I'm making my food. I'm pushing that frontier of self-sufficiency forward. I want to be able to make what I need to make, etc., right? So that's why I'm working constantly on composting in a few different fashions, on the worm bins and on harvesting their leachate and their castings, on a leaf pile from which you can get some leaf mulch, even urine. I wish I had cows or chicken for their manure. I want to bring all this good stuff because I don't really have access to Chilean bat guano in my backyard, right? So that's one of the things I'm not going to be able to replace that. And I need to find these other ways of creating nutrient-rich amendments to be able to say potting soil. And once you've got this kind of selection of really rich living organic material, then you can just take local soil, local dirt, and mix it with some of this. And you know, everyone's got their own potting soil recipe, and I'm personally still refining mine. Like a fine pasta sauce. But I'll flip that around to the listeners. What's working for you guys? And let me know how you have come to build your own potting soil over the year. What blends you prefer? What ingredients you like? And with that, I wanted to get to this next question, which is a big one. Ice Age Farmer, you say I need to defend my family and our food in the social unrest that is approaching due to food price rises perhaps even lack of availability of food. How do I even begin to teach myself self-defense? And I think this might even be more broadly phrased as, how do we undo to all of our brethren who are following the aforementioned breadcrumbs, realizing what's going on right now on this planet, how do they even begin to undo the brainwashing that the state and the media apparatus has installed that people have just this innate fear of weapons? And I know I've avoided talking about this subject because people have very strong emotional reactions to it. Some people who are very into gun culture will think that I do this a disservice in the way I speak about it. And some people who are extremely anti-gun have probably already stopped listening to me. And I have to accept that because this information, I think, is worth talking about. History, it's a fair question. History and logic suggest that we're entering some difficult times. A social trifecta, famine, unrest, and violence, and plagues. And I've spoken thus far frequently to food security. It's time to talk about that security part. I have been reluctant, and I'll tell you why in a second here, but I shouldn't have been because it's really important. I absolutely believe this, that every human being should be able to walk up to and without fear pick up and make safe nearly any weapon, which means you know enough to walk up to it, pick it up, unload the bullets, and do whatever's necessary, work the action, just make sure that there's nothing in this weapon that it's not going to go off suddenly, and therefore there's no reason to be afraid of it, right? So if you are absolutely at the starting point, here's what I would honestly recommend. The first step, you're already listening to me talk, so go subscribe, go find Gun Talk with Tom Gresham and a few of these other shows, whatever appeals to you, and listen to knowledgeable people talk. I am not an expert on anything. I'll just say that. I'm not an expert. It's better, especially with firearms, that you listen to some experts. Doing so, you will very quickly learn. Number one, everyone speaks to safety and training first. Period. It is part of that culture because it's absolutely important. If you post a video of sloppy handling, for example, if you record yourself saying, hey, I just got this gun and I like it, and then you pick it up with a finger on the trigger, or you start a video and you pull the trigger without showing the viewer that you checked the chamber to see if it was loaded, you should expect to get taken apart by people, and you should be. You deserve a flood of negative comments, and every one of them you deserve, rightly so. So that anyone who finds this video can immediately know that this isn't proper handling. You can garden with some tolerance for mistakes. You know, there's a lot of art to it. It's very fun. That's why I like it. But when you're handling firearms, there's zero tolerance for error. That's one of the reasons, one of the rules is you always treat a weapon like it's loaded. There is just no room for mistakes. And that's partly why I've left this aside. As I said, I'm not an expert. And as a human being, I am fully capable of making a mistake in this segment. But it's, as I said, it's worth covering. I do hope you're already working on your security. But again, if you're not even sure where to start, and you're just coming to these realizations, then I, again, recommend you go listen to some experts. And I will humbly submit this as a plan, the following, to start undoing that brainwashing and to get moving on this path. First, we need to talk about physical fitness. If you can't even move, if you can't endure a brisk run, have some stamina, then you can't engage. There's no fight in you. There's no gym required to get in shape. You can check out body weight exercises are one of my favorite things because it's literally, it's like self-sufficient exercise, right? I don't need anything except for my body, which I happen to have wherever I go. So this is one of my favorite ways of, and it's pretty quick and easy to do a pretty effective workout using these body weight exercises. There's a bunch of YouTubes, and there's even a subreddit on this, and plenty of folks doing this. Check it out. Or use whatever you have used in the past or you prefer. There's nothing. But suffice to say, you need to be able to move around without getting really out of breath. Or there's just no... I just think that's a given. Then, once you're able to move around, we need to talk about situational awareness. It is a different way of experiencing. You can turn it off and on, but it needs to be practice and it needs to be second nature when you're walking around. The ability to constantly be evaluating threats, to be aware at all times of the entrances and exits and secondary exits, emergency exits, all of these things, have an awareness of them, so that if at any given time something demands that you exercise that knowledge, it's ready. You may hear about the Cooper color codes that describe, I think it's mostly for law enforcement, that describe sort of the different levels of awareness. And it's worth reading those if you aren't familiar with this, if you've never taken any self-defense class, just to start to get a picture mentally of the fact that there are different ways to experience being somewhere and different places that your focus needs to be when you're, you know, walking down the street. It's pretty dangerous to just be staring at your iPhone, needless to say. So it's a different kind of situational awareness, excuse me. All right, so now we can move around and you know what's going on. This is a basic prerequisites to existing in reality. A lot of people don't have those things. That's why I have to mention them. All right, so now I still think before we even get to weapons, we should talk about unarmed defense. Even just as it's, if it's one of the, as I mentioned, the basic self-defense classes, these classes are really helpful to get a picture of the situational awareness I just described. They sort of take you through that and practice with a few different situations, and then see that you were you aware of this threat, and how could you have mitigated this or do it better. And there's really no way to get better at this other than trying it. Other than, that's why I will take Tom Gresham's just mantra and apply it here as well. Training, 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 training. There are so many, I didn't think of that, that if you don't have training and expert guidance and coaching on how to handle these situations, then you're never, you know, these are the kind of situations you hope you never even have to deal with. But in the event that you do, how can it be something that you have practiced so that it's second nature how to deal with it, instead of this once in a lifetime, I'm freaking out, I don't know what to do, kind of a panic. That's the wrong reaction. And the only way to have the right reaction is to have practiced these situations, even and especially the ones we hope never happen. So now, I'm not saying that you need to go out and be a black belt, but I think you should evaluate some priorities with respect to, you know, how to balance the need to practice growing food and how to practice staying in shape and being self-aware and self-defense. But I don't know, check out some different dojos, or if you don't want to do a self-defense class, check out some different dojos and see if there's a philosophy that works for you, a form that you take to, more importantly, a sensei that you respect, that you want to work with. And if you find him, then I would definitely try and do at least some sessions with him, get to know what he's all about, spend some time there. It will change you for the better. All right, now, we are physically fit, we have situational awareness, and we can move our bodies if need be. You're feeling now ready to demystify these things that everyone has been programmed to be afraid of. Go now take a handgun class. Start there. It's worth the money for this initial introduction. Ideally, you'll get all the classroom time you need so that you then feel ready to hit the range. All your concerns, all your worries, fears, whatever, should be exorcised over the course of that classroom time with whoever's in there. So make sure it's someone you trust. And then ideally the class also affords you some range time. A little bit of time with a revolver and a pistol would be great. Start with a 22 if you want. It's nothing. There's no kick whatsoever. It's just like a BB gun. and you can stop there and be happy and come back another day, or you can move on and try a 9mm. I would go for it if the class includes it, or do whatever you want. This is just my basic suggestion, is to have that first start, and then you can take more classes if you want on shotguns or rifles or whatever you want. But more than likely, you'll be able to intuit how other firearms work once you get this basic class on the workings of just one class of them. Beyond that, after that, get as much rain time as you can, especially if you're able to rent and try out different models. It's an awesome way to learn how to handle anything and just get comfortable with a wide variety of things, as well as using that time to get comfortable with and figure out which pieces you're going to want to buy. So what to get? This is a huge question. I would just offer that guns are like tools. There are ones that will do a good section of the work that you need to get done for you, the heavy lifters. And then there are some more niche, exquisite specialty pieces. It turns out that these things can be pretty damn fun too. So that definitely plays into why folks collect a lot of them. But I would definitely recommend that you pick up minimally the following: a pistol, a shotgun, a .22 plinker for a small game and target practice, and then a rifle and or a carbine. My recommendation is to go out and shoot them and just see what feels best. See what's comfortable in your hand. That said, if you really need it, I'll give you the specific recommendations. But I really shouldn't. It's very personal. It's like telling you what brand of underwear I use. It doesn't matter. It's a matter of taste, whatever works for me. But when you're looking for a pistol, I do like the Glock. The G19 is so easy to handle. It's ridiculously easy to strip down. Very dependable. There's spare parts everywhere. They're everywhere. And I like the way it feels. So there it is. On the shotgun, you can't go wrong with a Mossberg 500 or the Remington 870. I do like 12 gauge, but with either of those guns, it's hard to lose either way. For the 22 long, this is a rifle. For small game, the 10/22 is kind of the default answer here, but whoa, wait a minute. The 10/22 takedown is awesome. It is a 10/22, which is a Ruger 22 long rifle, but you can just snap this thing in half. There's like a little button and you just hit that and then twist it and it comes in two, and then you can plop it right back together. It's super easy to strike and take it apart or put it back together. And once you've taken it apart, you can literally just toss these two pieces into your backpack or anywhere. That's a real asset. And I love being able to just ride my bike around with a rifle in my backpack and no one would even know. I highly recommend that. It's just handy and cool. The AR-15, 223 may be a small round, but these guys are just so versatile and they're so pervasive that it's worth calling out. Check it out. See how it feels to you. I like the AR-15 quite a bit. If you're hunting bigger targets, big game, then you'll need a .308. But actually, I can stop there, because if you're hunting bigger targets, then you already know much more than I'm talking about here. So I can just stop. And I think we'll stop there. If you're intending to stay in a more populated area, I can't even stop there. I want to start talking about getting into low light, no light training with a carbine, but it's beyond the scope of this question, which is how to get started. And trust me, if you pick up just those three, pistol, shotgun, rifle, you will already have busted into a world where you start to realize the appeal of these things and why there are specific tools for specific tasks and what those are, and you'll get into it. Also, watch Hickok 45 on YouTube. He's like the grandpa I never had. And he's found sponsors, so you can find his videos with him speaking to and trying out nearly any weapon you can imagine. He's great. There's many sources for information, and a lot of them are decent. There are some, you know, people doing crazy things to put weapons through extremes and whatnot, but actually those can be informative too. Everyone wants to see people cooking bacon on an AK-47, right? All right. That is a really high-level answer to how to even start thinking about self-defense. And I know I left a lot of stuff out. I just wanted to take a crack at that because we haven't talked about it yet, and it is important, and I wanted to honor that. So we'll leave it there for now and see how it evolves. With that, I want to throw out a book of the day. As one of our community members mentioned in their daily steps, a lot of people don't know how to even save seeds at this point if they are able to grow vegetables in the first place, especially root crops. I think he was referring to or seemed particularly mysterious. So I wanted to recommend this book of the day, and I'll have a link to it below in the show notes. It's called Seed to Seed, and it's a great reference for how to take a number of different edibles from seed to seed, from the seed all the way planting and everything you can imagine right up to harvesting the seed for next season and how much you can expect to get out of that, and just a ton of great information that at this point in time, I think we are all incumbent on us all to learn. So wanted to throw this out there. I also found an item that I thought might be useful to a lot of Ice Age farmers, and that is the Thermo Cube. Again, I'll link to this below. It's a standard little plug thing that plugs into to your wall outlet and then has two outlets on it that you can use to drive heaters or fans. So this thing it has a thermostat inside of it and will turn on the power to those outlets at 35 degrees and it'll turn it back off at 45 degrees. So as it approaches freezing, you can have your heaters turn on based on this little tiny, it's a little $13 plugger thing. It's very cheap. It only power those heaters when they're needed. Alternatively, there's a model that turns on at 78 and turns off at 70, which I assume you'd use for a greenhouse fan or that kind of an application. But just a nifty little device with everything embedded in it, so pretty useful. And with that, this has been Episode 8 of Ice Age Farmer Podcast, mapping a path forward to prosperity through resilient, self-sufficient communities and sharing knowledge in the grand solar minimum. Let's go build a future.